Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $20 on the Steel MS-162 or MS-170 chainsaw. Real Steel. Offer valid through June 30th, 2024. See participating retailer for details. Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now save $30 on the American-made Steel FS56 RCE trimmer. Real Steel. The FS56 RCE is made in America of U.S. and global materials. Offer valid through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Visa, who wants to know, where would you like to be? Whether you're a super fan getting ready for game day or a food truck owner feeding hungry fans, Visa wants to help you pursue your passion with the simple and unwavering vision to be the best way to pay and be paid for everyone everywhere. They know that every Visa transaction is a promise, and they want to provide you with the most secure and easy payment experience possible. That's why they're continuing to make innovations, from tapping to pay to pushing money directly to your debit card so you can get to where you would like to be. Visa. Everywhere you want to be.
Hey everyone, good morning. Welcome to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf, that's Nick Wright. Chris Broussard joining us this morning. It is a snowy, cold, miserable day in New York City, but we have got a tremendous Wednesday show for you today. A lot to get to. We're going to dive right in, start with the Cowboys. So on paper, the Dallas Cowboys should be a perennial powerhouse. And while paper beats rock, it does not beat the other teams on your schedule. Dallas currently riding a three-game losing streak, failing to hold on to their lead in the NFC East, now tied with the Philadelphia Eagles. You can choose who's to blame for the 6-7 mess. Is it the players? Is it the coach? Is it the owner slash general manager? Or you can ask Troy Aikman. Listen to what he had to say.
It's unlikely that Jerry will ever bring somebody in that can help this football team in that regard, just because he's been real stubborn and steadfast and that he's the one in charge. And I think in a lot of ways, until that changes, this team's going to have some problems.
When you can cut out the person between the decision maker and the people doing the recommending, then you can make quicker, more succinct, and more responsive decisions. Nobody ever has had the final say but me. Now, you know, I really don't like to say that, but that's a fact. And so when we don't do good, we all know who the ultimate total responsibility. And pro football, the guy that ultimately has the responsibility for paying the bills, makes the decision.
Nick, we know that Jerry Jones, the general manager, has actually done a pretty good job of picking the players, but is Jerry Jones the owner holding the Cowboys back from being great?
Well, no, because you can't separate the two. I mean, the Cowboys' problem is not Jerry Jones. And the owner's job is to provide resources for the team to succeed. And Jerry Jones has done that in spades throughout his career as the Cowboys owner. They have, at this point, either the best or the second best stadium in football. Everyone talks about top of the line operations there. So that's the ownership piece. You mentioned the general managing piece. Is Jerry Jones and his son, Steven, are they the league's best general managers? No. Do they have a top five front office in football? Probably not. But just look in the NFC East to remind yourself how bad it can be. You can be Washington, which has had more than a decade of Bruce Allen's mismanagement with an actual bad owner in Daniel Snyder giving the blessing to it. Or look to the New York Giants, where you have good ownership in the Maras, but they can't get the GM position right, as evidenced by Dave Gettleman flailing about since he's taken over there. So the Cowboys right now are an underachieving team who are playing for a coach whose message has gone stale, is what I was trying to say there. But we also need to remind ourselves, at least in my mind, Broussard, the Cowboys do not have some birthright on greatness. They are not the Lakers. They are not the Yankees. They are. They are as far as valuation, as far as the image of the team. The Yankees have been good in basically every decade in the history of baseball since the teens. The Lakers have been good in every decade in modern since they were in Minneapolis. The Cowboys were dominant in the 70s. They were dominant in the 90s. They've been a good football team otherwise with a real downtick in the 80s. We elevate them to a place that I don't know that they've ever actually earned, aside from the fact that they are the best marketed team in all of sports and maybe the highest profile team in our biggest major American sport.
See, I disagree. I do think Jerry is a big problem. And you're right. He's drafted well with his son, Steven. They have talent. But the last 25 years, he's been running the show. And that quote we played from WFAN or from FAN The Fan 105.3 in Dallas, he went on in other parts of that. And he said, look, I've been involved from the beginning, from jocks to socks. Yep. That's his quote. He said, you can't exchange a player. You can't trade a player. You can't make a draft pick without me giving my approval. I'm paraphrasing, but that's essentially what he said. Okay, he put it on himself because for 25 years since Barry Switzer was there, they have not won a Super Bowl. And are they the Lakers? I mean, I think, like you said, in marketing they are, prestige they are. Those are the three franchises of America, the Yankees, the Lakers, and the Dallas Cowboys. And for the Dallas Cowboys to go 25 years without a Super Bowl, what, two playoff wins in that stretch?
They haven't been to a conference championship game in 25 years as well.
This is all on Jerry Jones. And look, Jerry Jones, Troy Aikman said it. Anyone who's a non-player, any non-player who can steal Jerry's thunder, who can get more credit or is viewed as a guy who's smarter or just as smart as Jerry, he gets rid of Tom Landry. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't time for Landry to go, but he gets rid of Tom Landry. Jimmy Johnson.
Out.
Bill Parcells, it doesn't work out. And he goes 10 years with Jason Garrett, who is the definition of mediocre. Jerry Jones, and then even when he took over, the Cowboys weren't known for drama. They're a circus now under Jerry Jones and have been essentially from day one. Before Jerry Jones got there, they were America's team. They were known for the uniforms, the cowgirls,
of course.
You know, the great, you know, Hollywood Henderson and Drew Pearson, Tony, the great characters and personalities
and
they had.
Aside from
not
the Steelers,
circus
they
act.
Were the team of the 70s.
Yes.
I mean, they went to five Super Bowls. They won two. Their success in the 90s, they went to four, won three. They won three in 4 years, pardon me. In the 70s, they went to five Super Bowls. They lost three of them. So we look at the 90s as a better era. But they were great.
And I'm saying the drama too. They were, you know, like now the Cowboys are in the news for drama. They're a circus.
But the news is also different now than it was.
Granted, but.
Right? Like, I mean,
yeah, I'll give you that.
There's a lot of, I wonder how the Cowboys would have been covered in the 70s if these shows and the media existed the way it does today in the 70s.
But part of it is on Jerry Jones, because the reason that you can't just go out and get a great head coach is because you have to look for more than just, well, is he a great head coach? You have to look for a guy who, while Jason Garrett is mediocre, he was a great Jerry Jones head coach because he was never going to butt heads with him. He was never seemingly going to stand up to him, disagree with him. I wonder how much of all of this, whatever you want to call it, drama, noise, distraction, has trickled down to the players this season. This is more than in years past if we heard Jerry Jones after every game talking about kickers and whether we keep them. Because
they're disappointing this year. He's always talked after every game.
Not as much about the intricacies of what they're doing.
Because they're losing.
But how much of that is it's chicken and the egg? Are the players here all that? Are they distracted?
I guess I don't think it's chicken and the egg. I think it is very clear the team is playing poorly. So Jerry, who always talks after every game, always does those Tuesday morning, I think it is, radio interviews on 105.3 in Dallas. He has less good things to talk about. And again, I'm not here to try to, you know, die on a hill defending Jerry Jones. What I am saying is, if we were to power rank league front offices, The Cowboys are in, I believe, the top third of the league. And if we were to power rank owners, if we were to just separate the two, Jerry Jones is in the top third of the league as far as what he has accomplished. I'm not saying they couldn't. It's impossible that they do better. I'm saying it would be so easy for them to do worse. And your point on Jason Garrett, I would rather my owner be patient with a coach than quick trigger. I think the teams that have constant turnover at head coach are always failures. And there haven't been a lot of clear and obvious exit ramps in the Jason Garrett era if you actually go year by year as far as what was the year he wildly underachieved prior to this one when you were going to fire him? I don't know.
I think you're expecting less from the Cowboys. And you look, again, what do they have? Five Super Bowls?
Five Super
Bowls. I mean, that's second most ever. You mentioned top third ownership, top third front office. That's not good enough for the Cowboys. It should be top five.
Top or top in both two, of those. Top three. I get it.
I just got higher expectations for him. And I think Jerry when he comes out, he overreacted to the New England loss. And I think he did it to light a fire under Jason Garrett and those players. They lost 13-9 in Foxborough. And you go off like they just lost to the Jets. And it backfired on him. And I think they're coaching tight. And I think they're playing tight. And that's why they're struggling more than ever.
Lucky for them, the other team tied in the division is the Eagles, who are way underachieving as well. So at least they have a little bit of wiggle room. Kawhi's current team is playing Kawhi's former team. Lucky for the Claw, he gets his NBA championship ring. Lucky for the fans, they get to see Kawhi play again as he's well-rested coming off of Monday's load management game. Nobody happier than Drake, Nick.
Yeah.
Nick, can Kawhi have the same impact on the Clippers that he had with the Raptors, do you think?
Before I answer, just quickly, to Ketta, our boss, I am going to go to this game. I'll do the show remotely via Toronto tomorrow. Probably tough to get a flight back after the game tonight, but I'll go. It'll be fun. Get to say hi to your friend Kawhi.
Fox
I'll be
will
right
send
there.
You.
Yeah, just, and I'll do
and
the show
bring
from
you
Toronto.
Back.
Okay,
you're
so
a big guy
listen,
here, Nick.
I'm very excited to see this game in person tonight, which I'd love to do.
Is he making fun of me or Fox?
Can he have the same impact on the Clippers if they win the title? That's the only way. The only way you can have the same impact for the Clippers, the Raptors, if he wins the title. There has been any...
This year. That's what you're saying.
Eventually. Right. Yeah, a title. Until he wins a title in Los Angeles, he will not have the impact he had in Toronto because Kawhi's legacy is a word thrown around too often, so very narrow. Kawhi's legacy in Toronto is based purely off of 6 weeks in the postseason. He was not some great regular season player for them. He was good. He was the best player on their team. He was himself.
He was one of the top players in the league, wouldn't you say that?
Yeah, I mean, he was second team all NBA, second team all defense, played 3 out of 4 games throughout the season, and they were a 59-win team the year before he got there. They're on pace to, they won 58 last year, and they're on pace to win 58 this year. The difference was, Toronto was a team that couldn't get over the hump in the postseason. That was either because the hump was LeBron James or just the organization, whether it was Dwayne Casey's fault, he was the fall guy for it, or otherwise, couldn't do it. And Kawhi was sensational in the postseason last year from really the first game of the postseason, right, which they lost to Orlando. He made a huge shot in the corner late in that game. That shot right there, what they did against Giannis and the Bucks, and then, of course, in the NBA Finals. But this is – Kawhi has put himself in, I would consider, a bit of an awkward position compared to last season, which was last year he handled being traded to a place he did not want to go to beautifully. He didn't allow
perfectly,
any noise.
Right.
He played. Nobody really gave him any flack for the load management because he was coming off a major injury. When he played excellent. And I don't think they would have, if he'd have missed that shot against the Sixers and they lose in overtime, I don't think people would have killed him for it. I think people would have said, hey, Kawhi did his job because you didn't have the championship expectations that you now have. Things are different now. He gets to go to the place he wants to go to. He helps orchestrate a trade where they remake the team around getting Paul George. He's missing time again, and they're trying to go head-to-head with the Lakers. So how can he do it? He's got to go win the title. And I know that's unfair, but I don't think it's unfair. I know that's a lofty goal, but that is, to me, the only way to match what he did in Toronto. To me, that's obvious.
No, I totally agree. And I mean, look, what he did in Toronto was just spectacular. I mean, that is one of the greatest runs in recent NBA history, because you go to a team for 1 year, and I was saying from the beginning, he could win a championship there and still go to the Clippers. Because at that point, it looked like everybody was saying he's going to the Clippers. And that's, of course, what happened. So to make the most out of 1 year, that's why Toronto will give him a celebration, a coronation. There is no way there could be any ill feelings from the Raptors fans for Kawhi Leonard.
And he didn't mislead them.
No.
He didn't lead them on.
No. Nope.
Because he didn't allow any noise to come.
One great year. And he hit the only game-winning Game 7 buzzer beater in NBA history.
Yep.
So you got to give him credit for that. Now, to your point, he definitely has to win a championship with the Clippers. I mean, you could say he has to bat 1,000 with the Clippers, you know, win the title every year to equal what he did in Toronto, which he will not do. But he is fully capable of winning a championship. Now, we both picked the Lakers. I feel confident in that pick, but I also feel like the Clippers are capable of beating the Lakers.
And
I think they have a chance.
Do you think they're their biggest competition?
Yes. I mean, Milwaukee is playing great, but The Clippers have two, I mean, some people might say Lou Williams has become a star.
Sure.
So two, maybe three stars. They got a championship coach. They've got great depth, chemistry. Everybody knows their role, and they're hungry. Milwaukee's got one star. I mean, I don't know if we're ready to start calling
Chris Middleton.
Middleton's
not a star. Right. Well, he's the star that Lou Williams is. So they,
okay.
Superstars.
So let's say
superstar 2-1, no doubt about it.
Budenholzer's a good coach. Some people thought he had his struggles in the playoffs last year, not Doc Rivers. So, yeah, I think the Clippers are their toughest competition. Kawhi Leonard, look, I get it. He's shooting a career low from the field right now.
He hasn't been very good since Halloween.
I give you the numbers, but when you watch the game, his impact
plays
on the game. Yeah, I hear you. I'm with you. I'm against the load management too. But when he plays, his impact is incredible. He's a mid-range assassin. He's so tough and physical defensively. You just hate playing against him.
So then I will ask you, does it matter if he wins the championship? Does it matter how he wins the championship?
No.
You don't care if he load manages his way right through a title, if he wins the title.
No. If he wins the title,
doesn't matter.
Then it's, I would argue, the ripple effects as far as the impact on other players and teams engaging in this level of load management is going to potentially be damaging for the league.
Agreed.
People think I got something against Kawhi. I cross
just
my heart.
Little,
I do not.
A little?
No. It is scary to me because of how much I love the NBA that if this level of load management infects the rest of the league, then they really do have to remake the season, remake the schedule. We have to look at so many different things that you and I were joking about off the air yesterday, like the top 75 after 75 years, these types of ways that one of the reasons NBA's popularity is NBA Twitter and the lists and the debates, and all of it changes if it starts being play 60 of 80.
I agree.
And so that's what I'm apprehensive about. Nobody ever thought I had anything against Kawhi Leonard until this season started and he started missing 1 out of 4 games when he said it's the best he's ever felt. He's missing a bigger percentage of games this year than he did last year. And the other thing that I pushed back on was the revision is, I know the playoffs matter more than the regular season, no doubt, but they can't be the only thing that matters. The revisionist history of Kawhi Leonard being the best player in the league, it's just a conversation that never existed in NBA circles anywhere until 2 weeks in May and June. Last year, who were discussed as the best players in basketball? LeBron, Durant, Giannis, Steph, Harden. How many people did we have to go down? I mean, in MVP voting, Dame and Jokic finished ahead of him last year.
But he was punished because of, and he's basically foregoing regular season accolades.
Yep.
Like, I had him on my third team All-NBA.
Because he didn't play enough.
Yeah, that was the only reason, but he didn't play enough. So, yeah, it's unfortunate that he's load managing like this. And what I've said, and I'll say it again, if you load manage like he is, you better win the championship. If they don't win the title, there will be backlash. If he comes back next year after going out in the second round or the Western Conference Finals and load management, there's going to be a lot of backlash.
In a different way, like if the Lakers get it to the NBA Finals, and now I know some people love throwing LeBron's finals record in his face, but set that part of his side. If LeBron and Anthony Davis both play 75, 78 games and they go to the NBA Finals and they lose a war to the Milwaukee Bucks, I think a lot of people, myself included, would say that is a hell of a season. That is a successful season. It might be a little disappointing, but a successful season because of what
they
did
lose to the Bucks
throughout the regular season. Yeah, because sometimes it's somebody's time. Maybe it's Giannis's time. The Clippers, it's first or last for them this year because of what the way they are positioning the regular season as preseason, which is what they're doing.
On to the litany of injuries that have plagued the Philadelphia Eagles. It was reported yesterday that Alshon Jeffrey is done for the season after suffering a foot injury on Monday. Philly sitting at 6-7, tied atop the NFC East with Dallas. Nick, can Carson Wentz overcome injury after injury after injury to lead the Eagles to the playoffs?
Well, I think the Eagles are going to go to the playoffs. And I guess if you want to say they get led by their quarterback, then the answer is yes. This is going to be a win by default. This is whomever wins this division. I know you believe the Cowboys. But I don't think either one of us think one of these teams all of a sudden is going to surge to the finish, flip a switch, and become the team that they could have been at the beginning of the year. And the problem for Philly is it would be easy, and it is probably not just easy, somewhat fair, to blame some of the issues on offense at the wide receiver injuries. Like they're going to go into this game potentially where the healthiest wide receiver they have is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and he's got 130 receiving yards on the year. So like they Zach Ertz was always prominently featured in the offense, even more so this year's throwing to tight ends and running backs is Wentz. One of the problems for Philly is, but what's the excuse on their secondary not being good year over year? What's the excuse on the way underwhelming front seven? We can bring the injuries up in that as well. Lost Malik Jackson early, lost Timmy Jernigan. Like they've dealt with injuries. But this team, the only reason I believe they're going to win the division is because I have so little faith in Dallas right now against teams with a pulse. And Dallas has to play this weekend a team with a pulse before they have to go to Philadelphia. But if the Eagles make the playoffs, I don't think it's going to be because anyone led them there. I think it's going to be because someone had to make the playoffs out of this division because that's how the league is set up.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And like you said, I picked Dallas to win this division. I think both of them will probably get beat in the first game in the playoffs, whichever one makes it.
Absolutely.
But if I had to pick one of the two that I thought could actually maybe get on a run, I would pick Dallas because really? I think they have more talent. You know, I think they had more talent when the two teams were healthy, but especially with Philadelphia being banged up the way they are, I don't have much faith in them at all. And as far as Wentz leading them to the playoffs, look, I like everyone else, I see the physical gifts. I see the physical tools. I remember when he was 11-2 and en route to winning the MVP award. But since then, he is 11-13 as a starter with Philadelphia. That tells me that there's something lacking in the intangibles department. Are you a leader of men? Is the locker room all behind you? And obviously there are plenty of reports about issues that other players have with him in the locker room. You know, we know they built the shrine to the backup quarterback. And that doesn't just speak about what they think about Nick Foles. It speaks about what they think about you as the starter. That's disrespectful. And so those are the concerns I have about Carson Wentz. It's nothing physical. It's about the intangibles, making the right decisions and things like that. So I'm not very confident in his ability to lead them to the playoffs. But as you said, if they somehow make it, it'll more so be because Dallas is falling apart.
And now it looks like the Eagles are going to finish the season without a single receiver having 500 receiving yards, which has not happened for that franchise since 1966, when the NFL was obviously a very different game. And the one point that I'll disagree with you on is, we agree, whomever wins this division, either Seattle or San Francisco are going to go there and I think crush them. But if you were to tell me, I guarantee you the NFC East winner is going to win a playoff game, I would tell you, well, then the NFC East winner must be Philadelphia, because Philadelphia has shown me, even if it was just a moment, by beating Green Bay, by beating Buffalo, that they actually can beat competent opponents. That is something Dallas, through 13 weeks, has not shown a single time.
To your point on the receivers and what Carson Wentz is dealing with, Alshon Jeffrey has fewest yards and catches since his rookie season. He is not going to be that big of a loss for the team with 43 catches, 430 yards, four touchdowns.
But I do wonder how much of that is on Carson. How much of Alshon Jeffrey's bad season is on the fact that Carson Wentz is having a substandard season himself? Like, that is I think both parties have to play into that to a degree.
Let's move on and talk some Patriots. They are under investigation for videotaping 8 minutes of the Bengals sideline during their game against the Browns on Sunday. And with Bill Belichick letting everyone know he has, quote, no involvement in this, a recent report says that severe sanctions are unlikely for the Patriots. Broussard, have all the allegations over the years, do you think, tarnished this Patriots dynasty?
Unfortunately, yes. Because I have great respect for what they've done over the last 20 years. I've said Bill Belichick is the GOAT. Tom Brady is the GOAT. But it's like Barry Bonds. Barry Bonds is the best baseball player I've ever seen. And he never was caught for PEDs. But there will always be a mental asterisk in our mind when we think about Barry Bonds. It's the same thing now with the Patriots. I'm sorry. Like, because it's not just Spygate, Deflategate, and Scoutgate, or whatever you want to call this. Do your job gate. It's also the first two Super Bowls. Remember, when they won the first Super Bowl, St. Louis said they taped our walkthrough. And they lost that by 3 points. When they won the second Super Bowl, Carolina, they were convinced that the players came back saying, it's like they're in our huddle in the first half. They had to change their whole game plan at halftime. They believe the Patriots taped them illegally, and they can't prove it, but they believe that as well. So there's always been a lot of smoke around this team as well. And look, we can debate and talk about, well, did they really get an advantage just by taping something? First of all, if there was no advantage, the league would make it wouldn't be illegal.
It would be okay for everyone.
Secondly, why are you doing it if there's no advantage? And thirdly, when you are talking about world-class athletes, all you gotta do is look at track and field. The difference between gold and finishing out of the medals is like 0.2 seconds. So when any little advantage with world-class athletes, regardless of the sport, makes a huge difference, and you look at their super, and I like the Patriots. I hate to have to say this, but this is a fact. When you look at their Super Bowls, all of them were close. The first three were by 3 points each. Mm-hmm. Last year was the biggest by 10. 6 points.
Atlanta's an overtime game. And Seattle, it comes down to the interception at the goal line.
I hate to say it because, again, I have much respect for what they've done. But there always, it seems, will be that mental asterisk, at least for the near future, while this is still fresh in our minds.
You shouldn't hate to say it. And you shouldn't say I'm sorry. They've done this to themselves. And the answer is yes, of course. This is part of the legacy. Because they have made it part of their legacy. They did not have to. If Spygate, which was as big of a scandal as the NFL really has seen in 20 years, if that was the only thing they ever got pinched for, then maybe, you know, time heals all wounds to a degree. But when you keep ripping the wound open every few years, you're reminded of it. And when, unlike baseball, so here's the thing. With the Astros scandal that we're in the midst of, there some of the mitigation has been a lot of people saying, well, everyone does this to varying degrees. There's been none of that defense with New England on any of these things. People don't make the allegation our communication, quarterback to coach, goes out at the most inopportune times when we're playing in Soldier Field. They say happens when we're at Gillette. People don't say it felt like they knew what we were doing unfairly against the Seattle Seahawks. They say it about the New England Patriots. There wasn't another team that went an absurd, and I wish I had the numbers in front of me, 40 games fumbling the ball one time in the midst of a deflated football scandal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. It happens with the New England Patriots. And Orlando Scandrick was on The Herd yesterday and talked about that there was beliefs the Patriots would send employees to go to hotels to see if they could find leftover playbooks and stuff. How about this? I defend them on that. I support them on that. You know what? If you can, within the rules, see, catch somebody slipping, right, catch them slipping. If you think Baltimore doesn't know that if you line up your left tackle here and your wide receiver here and your tight end here, someone else is eligible and you get a free touchdown, that's on you, Harbaugh. Get better. But we are all supposed to be playing by the same set of rules. And the argument that some people make is, well, they didn't need to do this. And I thought Mina Kimes made a great point yesterday. We all know a rich person that still literally clips coupons to save the $1.50. They don't have to, but they almost feel like they need to. At some point, this became part of how New England does business. It is, and when you have the same coach there for two decades, we talk about the infrastructure, the structural advantage they have by having the same infrastructure, by being able to pull on all these years and years of film and of experience. Part of the experience might be, hey, son, now that you're my safeties coach, linger on the field as long as you can and see what you can see. And then if you get kicked off by McDermott before the Bills game, we'll deal with it. Hey, guys, and I don't know what happened with this Do Your Job documentary. I know that it's not just that there's smoke. There's a small fire. And the problem is this building got burnt down by arson 10 years ago. It got burnt down by arson 5 years ago. And now that same building's on fire again. Maybe someone left the eggs on too long. Or maybe it's the same damn thing. And so to me, of course, it's part of the legacy. And it's not the biggest part, but it is a big part. What is there any allegation surrounding the Steelers of the 70s, the Niners of the 80s? Like, is there one that I don't know about? No, this is part of the Patriot way, it would appear.
And the worst thing would be, quickly, you said they didn't need to. The worst thing for the Patriots and the league was be if they really did need to. Because the league knows a lot more about this than we do. If they really did need to and wouldn't have won without it, that's even worse.
And folks saying, well, for the Bengals, why would they do it against the Bengals? Because that's a big Patriot fan defense. Quickly, I'll be very quick here. If that's your defense, then in your heart of hearts, you know they might do stuff like this. Because if I walk home tonight and I say to my wife, you killed somebody, and her answer is, who? Then it's like, whoa, hold on a second,
right.
As opposed to
him?
No. So if you're saying, if your defense is they wouldn't do it against the Bengals, you are implicitly saying,
they would do it,
but
against
the Ravens better watch themselves. That ain't right, man.
Back here, First Things First, now joined by former NFL head coach Eric Mangini. Good morning,
good
coach.
Morning. Good to see you.
What's up, Coach?
All right, Coach, we're talking about the team you used to coach, the Cleveland Browns, and the rumor now gaining steam that Odell Beckham Jr., could be traded after this season. If OBJ had as many touchdowns as he did reports about his unhappiness in Cleveland, the Browns would be a good team this season. But OBJ has just two touchdowns, so the Browns are not in a good place, a long shot to make the playoffs. As usual, head coach Freddie Kitchens is not concerned.
Odell and my relationship is fine, you know. So Odell and Adam's relationship is fine. I don't think there's any gotcha moment here, okay? But I can only tell you what I think and what I've seen from Odell, and what I've seen from Odell is nothing like the reports indicate. So, sorry.
Coach, how does this relationship end?
Well, I asked when I came on set, which report are we talking about? Because there's so many reports that come out about Odell, it's hard to keep track of which report Freddie could be referencing. And typically when you get in an argument with someone, you say, well, okay, are we good? And they say, yeah, we're fine. That doesn't mean that you're really fine. That means that, yeah, things are okay. You probably have a working relationship. But what's Freddie supposed to say? There's nothing that he can say that's going to help him if he acknowledges that there may be conflict or there may be disagreements, or he may have not been living up to the standard that they expected, he has nothing to gain from doing that. So he's got to get up on the podium every single week or every single day and say, yeah, things are good. We're moving in the right direction. He wants to be here. He believes in the system we have. He's fine with the trainers. Everything's good, because you have no alternative when you stand up there besides to say that.
Odell's played every game this year, right? Correct.
I don't know. I mean, I don't see many highlights. So I'm assuming.
Well, so he is having a less than productive season by his standards. Agreed.
Well, I mean, relationship the last few years is pretty on par with.
Okay. Well, I mean, yes. Okay, sure. So yeah. 2 years ago he was injured. He broke his leg. We can hold that against him. Last year he had 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns, on a team whose quarterback is cooked. But we're not allowed to blame great quarterbacks on the show. Only great wide receivers. So, we can now do the wide receiver, formerly great quarterbacks. Pardon me. So this year you. You mentioned we don't see a lot of highlights. Have we seen any sideline blowups? Because when he was having all the highlights in the world, that was only part of the story, because the sideline blowups were a big part of it. I haven't seen those. Has Odell said anything aside from, for the first time last week when he was asked about his future, and he seemed to openly ponder it? I don't know. I love it here. I love Jarvis. I'm happy. But no, tell me.
He had the watch incident. He had the shoe in. I mean, there were a couple things. He did not skate through the season but a blemish.
Okay.
He had a few things where there are other players.
Has he had any
I mean, he hasn't kicked a net. You're right. He hasn't done that. He hasn't yelled at anybody lately.
All the things that we acted like were
criminal cases,
now we're acting like it doesn't matter. That's fine. So let me rephrase it. Other than fashion-related issues, has he been anything but a model citizen in Cleveland?
I don't know.
I agree with you. He has not. I wouldn't use the word model citizen necessarily, but he hasn't had any issues on the sidelines. He hasn't blown up at coaches. He hasn't done interviews like he did with Lil Wayne, implying that I won out, that my quarterback's no good. I'll give you all that. But to your point, yeah, Watchgate, Shoegate, Visorgate, things like that.
Oh, okay.
Sure, there's three things.
But overall, I agree. Attitudinally, he's been fine.
But when you have a standard of a great receiver, you're expecting more. And I guess when you set the bar low enough, as long as you're not overtly disruptive, that's a win. And if that's the bar that you want, that's the bar that you want. So as long as you're not completely and utterly disruptive on the sideline, then it's all good.
No, but you hold on. What you guys are doing is setting a bar here for a team whose quarterback's ranked 33rd in the league in passer rating and saying you didn't clear it. The shoes, the Browns packed the wrong uniforms, and he and a teammate were wearing shoes that were not cleared with those uniforms.
Okay.
The visor, it is the responsibility of the officials before the game to tell you if you're in or out of protocol. They didn't. He then switched it. You guys want to flame him on the watch? Fine. The watch to me is such a non-issue. But we are, Coach, you said it, and you know how much I truly love you, but you said there are, I sincerely.
You know how much I love you. However, I'm going to say something insulting.
Well, because you said there's so many stories surrounding Odell. No, there aren't. This year, there have not been. He has been on his best behavior.
But he's in the news a lot. There are stories about him.
Because he's interesting.
But
we find him fascinating. Because he...
Didn't he have a blow-up? Didn't he have an issue on the sideline after one game where he said... Or he's yelling, "I can't get the ball to save my life," and there's a potential 2-minute drive, and he's way over on the other side.
Hold on.
And now, in the grand scheme of Odell blowups, it's not that bad.
No.
Listen, it's better.
And Odell being caught on a hot mic saying to himself, "I can't get the ball."
But you wouldn't hear a guy like Julio Jones say that.
Tom Brady yell at his receiver saying, "You got to get open." And if you did, it's leadership. We all know that's leadership. That's good. And Jason Witten, who everyone loves.
We're talking about a guy with 19 years record.
What about Witten when he is screaming for a team? Let me look at the standings real quick. Oh, with the same record, just as underachieving. That's leadership when it's Witten, of course. Because we change the rules for guys depending on how we feel about it.
There's a little to that, Nick. But come on, we can't act like Odell hasn't brought a lot of this on on himself. The Watchgate, here's my issue with you said that's a small thing or whatever. That shows me your mentality. When you want to wear a watch, $200,000, then what, $2 million watch during the game, that tells me you're too concerned, too focused on being cute and impressing the homeboys or whatever. You should be focused on the game. It's things like that. It's not just a watch. It's what does that say about your focus for the game?
And all last segment, you were rushing to judgment on the Patriots based off their track record, but now we're not supposed to rush to judgment on someone based off their track record. I don't see how that dichotomy can exist.
Because I think this year he has gone out of his way to try to change his reputation by not having those incidents, and now we're saying that doesn't matter.
But do you think everybody's making up the fact that he's saying, come get me, or I want out of Cleveland? Like, do you think that volume of reports is just made up? People just want to get after Odell?
No, I believe them.
Okay, if winning is everything, it's really about winning, and we all agree that Odell is one of the more talented receivers, if not one of the top five most talented receivers in the league. You've coached two teams now. Knowing what you know, would you want a guy like Odell on your team?
Look, I had a totally different philosophy on players, and maybe it was too strict from a character perspective because I wanted a certain type of guy. And I really believe when you have high character guys, then average becomes good, good becomes great, and great becomes a Hall of Famer. So I wanted a very particular type of guy. Do I want a player that's going to be consistently creating distractions? No, that's not the space that I'm in. That's not what I learned. That's not what I believe in philosophically. So I would probably shy away from that situation.
What I would say lastly in defense of Odell, I would like to hear once, he's now been on two teams, a teammate go on the record and say he's a bad guy in the locker room. We don't like him. He was a part of the problem. Haven't heard it. I would like to hear, aside from Tom Coughlin, a coach seem not to like Odell. Shurmur was putting his arm around him as much as he could. Gettleman traded him away after saying he wasn't going to. I agree with you, actually, Coach. I don't think you were too strict. I truly don't. And I think, in general, your philosophy is a correct one. But I also think there is a difference between flamboyant and character issue. And as far as do I think they were making it up? No, I think Odell probably is considering what it would be like outside of Cleveland. And I don't have a problem with it because I'm certain Cleveland is considering what it would be like without Odell. To me, that's always been a one-way street. Teams can cut, teams can trade, it's business. Players hold out or demand a trade. They're being selfish. I think that street should go both ways. And I think in the modern era, it's starting to go both ways. It doesn't bother me.
When you start getting your second and third team, it soon becomes not me, it's you. It's you. There's a reason that the Giants signed him to that big extension and then decided at the end of the day, after a year with him, to move on from it. And now he's in another place, which all Cleveland wants is for this to work out great. They want him to be successful. They'd love a big star like that in Cleveland that's helped leading him to the playoffs. That's a fantastic situation for him, and they're doing everything they can to make it work. So if it fails, it's not going to be for lack of organizational support of this decision.
Back here with Coach Mangini. The New England Patriots are 10-3 this season and on pace to win their 11th straight AFC East title. So what's the problem, you ask? Well, the problem is those three losses all came at the hands of the three division leaders in the AFC, the Ravens, the Chiefs, the Texans. Probably won't run into any of those teams in January. Hey, Nick, can the Patriots compete with the other top AFC teams in the playoffs?
We have no evidence that they can.
Mm-hmm.
None. They played Baltimore, fell down 17-0. Baltimore muffs a punt, New England gets back in the game, and they promptly fall down by 17 again. They play Houston, what I consider to be flawed Houston team. A Houston defense that has been leaking like a sieve since J.J. Watt went down, and even prior to that was substandard. But 31st in the red zone, 32nd third down defense. And they're down 28-9 with 4 minutes left in that football game. And then they play Kansas City against what I've been told for 2 years now is the league's worst rushing defense, and they can't run the football, and they pull off a trick play that is immediate for a touchdown that is immediately followed by Patrick Mahomes throwing an interception, an opportunity to really, in the first quarter, step on the necks of the Kansas City Chiefs. And the rest of the game, they score 9 more points and spend the next couple days whining about the refs. So I if they can, we are not going to be able to go to recent history. We're going to have to go to distant history. And for a long time, the narrative of the Patriots were, if you're going to catch them in September. Because by November and December, they got it figured out. Well, we are, Christmas trees are up now, and they're playing the worst football of the season. So I don't see the evidence that they should be confident about beating the teams they're going to have to beat if they're going to make their record-tying fourth Super Bowl.
Well, this season is a little bit different. And all the teams that you talked about, they have problems too. And we're going to see how well they are able to deal with their problems, and they're going to have injuries that come up. And as much as you list those games as being completely lopsided, they had a chance in two out of those three games to pull it off. They do have the number one defense in almost every single category. Yep. Their turnover differential is number one in the NFL, and that's a huge indicator of success and failure. They've been very successful generating points and opportunities on special teams. And as much as we want to say that it's a one just a one component game, how you play on defense, how you play on special teams, those things matter.
And they have the number one web series going. Right
they
now.
Do. It's outstanding. And Bill's done a lot of work on that, which is nice. I think it's going to be.
Can I ask you
next
a question
gonna be really good.
About that? You said special.
The
teams.
Web series.
No. The special teams. Their special teams have been exceptional, except for the one area where they've been horrible, and that's the area I think a lot of people focus on, maybe improperly, but is the most important of special teams, which is, can you make kicks? And Belichick seems to be so, understandably, lacking confidence in their kicking game. They're going for 4th and 7s at the 30. Like, how much of that is a concern for you?
Yeah, that's horrible. When you're in that situation where you have no confidence in your kicker, it's the worst feeling you could possibly have, because you're constantly making decisions to go for it that you normally wouldn't, and that don't necessarily make sense in the context of analytics and your experience. But when you're faced with how well that guy's kicking on that day, it's not even how well does he kick in general, it's how well he's kicking on that day, that creates a tremendous amount of uncertainty. And that's an area that New England's barely ever had to worry about. But let's just talk offensively. I think that when you see N'Keal Harry, he's come back. They're learning about him. Mohamed Sanu, they're learning about him. Isaiah Wynn, he's just gotten back in 2 or 3 games ago. So as much as we talk about their development, these guys are new additions to the team, and they're still learning about them. Do I think that it's where they want offensively? No. The problems they have in the offensive line are real, and I've said that for weeks and weeks now. But I do think they have the ability to figure out a way to overcome those deficiencies.
Yeah, look, I didn't pick them in the preseason to win the AFC. I would not pick them today. But to say they can't compete with these other contenders in the AFC, I think that's ridiculous. I mean, they've shown us. We've been talking about track record negatively the whole show, but we also have to look at their positive track record. I mean, we could have pointed to the same things last year, and they did have late losses last year, Nick, to Miami. Yep. Pittsburgh. If they lost to Miami this year, we would be saying, oh, they're done. You know what I mean? There's no way they can win. And in 2 of the last 3 games, Tom Brady didn't look good. The game he looked good was the Jets. So that was a blowout of a bad team. So I just think their defense, as you said, Coach, is legitimate. They held one of the best offenses in the league to 2 touchdowns just last week. And over the last, 23 minutes or so, scoreless. You know, so I wouldn't pick them to win the AFC, but I wouldn't be shocked either if they beat these teams, and I certainly give them a chance.
Why wouldn't you pick them to win the NFC? Because of their offense or because of Tom Brady?
The offense. I think at 42 years old now, Tom Brady can no longer carry mediocre talent at the skill positions. He's done that most of his career outside of Moss and Gronkowski. Now they're asking him to do it again, and I don't know that he's capable, but that's a big issue I have with them.
The question is, how good would these players be in other systems, and how much can they develop week in and week out? And I think that Tom does still have a force multiplier effect on the players around him, because he's getting the team into the right decision 90%+ of the time. So it could be a lot worse than it is based off of where they've been. We're just grading it on such a steep curve because we've seen it at a high level for so long.
Well, we're grading it on the curve of up until this week, he had a lower pass rating than Josh Allen. But can I defend a GOAT here? The GOAT being Belichick? Belichick still picks the players there, right? He's the GM de facto. Mm-hmm. I have that correct? Okay. The Patriots have no talent as a defense of one GOAT. People do understand that is then an indictment of the other. Because I saw a rookie wide receiver make a huge impact this weekend. He was Mecole Hardman. He was on the board when N'Keal Harry was picked. I saw the kid from Washington who had the unbelievable touchdown catch, who's been doing great all year. He was on the board. DK Metcalf was on the board. They chose.
Have they been playing all year, N'Keal, those guys that you're talking about?
Oh, okay, so fair enough. N'Keal Harry got hurt. How about the Muhammad
Sanu? How many games has N'Keal Harry played?
I think four?
Three or
how,
four.
How about okay. Muhammad Sanu, who now evidently you. I mean, you can't ask him to make an impact. Emmanuel Sanders.
No. Who said? I never said that. What I said is we talk about the learning curve of New England, where they learn about their players and they get to the spot where they're most productive. This learning curve with those group of players, because they're new, is at a different stage. Do I think that they can continue to develop? I'm saying yes. I'm just saying it's a little bit behind the normal progression that
well,
we see.
Well, my point
players.
Is a guy who was traded for 2 hours after Muhammad Sanu was traded for the same compensation, Emmanuel Sanders, who the Patriots could have gotten, his learning curve seems to be pretty sharp. I saw him catching touchdowns this weekend, going for 150 yards. Maybe that's the learning curve. And
everybody caught touchdowns this weekend in that game. They scored 100 points.
Yeah, because you had two live arm quarterbacks involved. Maybe Belichick's just lost his touch on picking the players. I don't know.
He's the GOAT coach, not the GOAT GM.
Broussard, do you want to play a little take your pick?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
I do.
Kawhi Leonard makes his return to Toronto tonight to receive his ring, but it is Paul George's play as of late that has the Clippers looking like title contenders. Which player is more important for the Clippers if they want to keep pace with the Lakers? Is it Kawhi or is it PG-13? Broussard, take your pick.
I can tell this is a Nick question.
No, it's not. I don't come up with the
question. I guarantee you're going to say Paul George.
Even though he's not your best player. Because you're right, it is Paul George. To keep pace with the Lakers.
Okay, because for the regular season.
That's what the question is. Keep pace with the Lakers. He's going to be there. He's going to be playing. Kawhi's played 17 games this year. Paul's played 13. Paul had double shoulder surgery and missed a month, and he's going to pass him in games played.
That's an unbelievable stat.
By the way, since Paul George came back, he's been better. Like, we can agree on that, right?
Since Kawhi has been slumping for whatever reason. I'll give you that.
Yeah, so Paul George.
But if you – regular season, yes. But they're not going to keep pace with the Lakers in the regular season. So, and you know, it really is all about the playoffs. So I'm looking at it as their best chance to beat the Lakers in the playoffs. And I don't think they will, but the best chance, Kawhi Leonard, period. And even though his numbers are down, when you watch the game, his impact is – very high.
His impact on the defensive end is not what it once was because he's not being asked to guard the opposing team's best player as much.
He's the type of guy you hate to guard you, though, because he's so strong and tough.
Especially
and
if you're
sturdy.
P.J. Tucker and he's standing in the corner guarding you.
We mentioned the Lakers. The duo of LeBron and Anthony Davis has worked early and it has worked often, and the two are now both being thrown into early season MVP conversation. So which Lakers star is more likely to win MVP, LeBron or AD? Broussard, take your pick.
Gotta be LeBron. Anthony Davis is having a tremendous year. But I'm tired of the narrative that Anthony Davis is actually the Lakers' best player. And I'm not saying everybody's saying it, but I'm hearing it more than I'd like to, because he's not. Anthony Davis is a number two guy. We saw him for 7 years as a number one. He's a number two, and he's a great one. And there's nothing wrong with being a
number two.
Yeah, he's the number one talent. But his personality, demeanor, all that, he's a number two. So he's a perfect fit with LeBron. LeBron is clearly the engine that makes them go. And LeBron has the narrative, too. Everybody thought he was the washed king. Yeah. And, you know, he played a different position. Now he's the best point guard in the league all of a sudden. So I got LeBron with a better chance.
And I think Anthony Davis, as early as next season, can be the number one that you're talking about. I think he needs to go through the cauldron of a deep playoff run to get that experience, okay, to maybe come in with a slightly sharpened game-to-game mentality. But the answer is LeBron. For the last 2 weeks, Anthony Davis has been the best guy on the team, I believe. The last 2 weeks, he's played better than LeBron. But over the course of the season, it's been LeBron. And credit to the Lakers blog, Silver Screen and Roll. They had a great article up this week. People should check it out, explaining how so much of the Lakers' offensive success is being predicated on LeBron seeing, essentially being able to skip the skip pass, like seeing the extra pass and being able to make it one pass early, right, and getting guys open. And a lot of Anthony's success, Caruso's success, the shooter's success has been because of LeBron. And while AD's been the defensive player of the year up to this point, LeBron's been an outstanding defender as well, just not up to that level. So I agree with you. It's also LeBron.
All right, the Lakers' 21-3 record this year is tops in the West, but Giannis has his Bucks with the same record out East. Both teams eyeing the Warriors' win record. So which team is more likely to break Golden State's 73-win record, the Lakers or the Bucks? Nick, take your pick.
To be clear, I would be shocked if either team breaks it. I'd be shocked if anyone breaks it. 74-8 is damn near impossible. 73-9 should have been impossible. But the answer is the Bucks. I do think the Bucks can get to 70, become the third 70-win team ever. It's easy. They're going to have a slightly easier schedule out East. Giannis is going to play 80-some close to 82 games. And on a night-in, night-out basis in the regular season, Giannis is the most dominating force in the league. And I think that's actually by a decent margin at the moment. So I say the Milwaukee Bucks.
Look, I don't think either team's going to get it. I'm sure you agree with that. But I would say the Lakers. And look, and they're not going to say it, and they shouldn't say it. You don't want to put that target on your back. And I'm not even saying that they're talking about it privately. But I wouldn't be surprised if in way in the back recesses of LeBron's mind, he would love to get that regular season record because it's just another notch on your belt. It's another way you top Michael Jordan. And I think LeBron also has the audacity, as he should, to believe I could win 74. And I'm not saying this is a goal of his. I'm just saying I could win 74 and win the championship. You know, Jordan did it with 72 and the championship. The Warriors were just an aberration to go 73 and lose. The Sixers won 69 before, mm-hmm, and won the championship with Wilt Chamberlain. So I would say the Lakers, because I don't know that I see them going to load management until, you know, the last 2 weeks that has
if
historically
they have the one
been
seed.
Right,
punch.
They'll sit LeBron and sit AD. But I would give them a better shot, although I don't think either team gets it.
All right, moving on to the Dallas Cowboys now. How about this for a head-scratcher? Dak, Zeke, and Amari are the first Cowboys trio to hit the collective marks of 4,000 passing yards, 1,000 rushing yards, and 1,000 receiving yards in franchise history. Unfortunately, all those numbers boil down to a mediocre 6-7 record. Nick, why is the Cowboys' talent not translating into wins?
Well, this is why I think Jason Garrett has to go. Because they haven't been hit with just a scourge of injuries the way Philly has. They haven't had their quarterback that we expect to have a good season fall off the way Baker Mayfield has. They haven't all of a sudden just been getting blown out of games. What's happened is they are 0-6 against teams with a winning record, and they are 0-5 in games decided by 7 points or less. That is the details. That is the ability for your team to make the biggest plays in the biggest spots or to have a schematic edge. Now, some of that can fall on the shoulders of Dak Prescott, but the rest of that falls to me on the shoulders of the coaching staff, offense and defensive coaching staff. So that's why you can have these gaudy numbers and have the team underachieve the way they did. The other way would be if the defense was just horrific. Your offense playing great, defense just horrific.
But that's not the case.
Right. The defense, I would argue, has been disappointing, right, but it's not like they have they're not the Arizona Cardinals defense this year, right? The Chiefs rush defense this year, or a team, the Saints had a bunch of years where Drew Brees threw 5,000 yards, they were 7-9 because the defense could not get it together.
Yeah, look, first of all, let's address the statistics. I mean, we know the Cowboys have had tremendous quarterbacks who are much better at this point than Dak Prescott.
Of course.
Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman. But it was a different game, and they weren't throwing for 4,000 yards. I mean, nowadays to throw for 4,000 is not that huge of an achievement for a quarterback. So let's go there for the young guns. But I agree with you on the things you said about Jason Garrett. I also would throw this in, though. Jerry Jones has created a circus. And granted, he's done this throughout his tenure there for the most part. But this year, I think he overreacted to the loss to New England. And I'm not saying they were playing great football before that, because they weren't. They lost to New Orleans without Drew Brees there. However, a 13-9 loss in Foxborough is not the time to panic. That's not a 13-9 loss to the Jets, okay? And he overreacted, I think, trying to get Jason Garrett a sense of urgency
about
him.
Light a little fire under him.
And the players as well, and it backfired. And because if he wasn't just trying to light a fire, he probably would have fired him. But he never had any intention of even thinking about firing him at that point in the season. So I think it's just gotten worse each week as Jerry's talked more and more. And I know that's his custom. But still, I think now Jason Garrett is coaching tight because he knows finally that this could be the last year. And I think the players are playing tight because of all the hoopla and the hype and everything that's going on.
Well, and I think the can we show the Cowboys on the year points scored per game, points allowed, their numbers. So look at the Cowboys are the team on the left, obviously. The team on the right, they're scoring more points than every game. They're getting more yards. They're allowing just slightly fewer points, about the same, and they're allowing fewer yards. So you would think those two teams are going to have similar results. Show me the team on the right. It is the 10-3 Green Bay Packers. How can one team have that level of success and the other team have the other? By the way, with the Packers, I would argue a tougher division, maybe a tougher road.
Right.
It's because Rodgers has not made the critical mistake and Matt LaFleur has not put the team at a schematic disadvantage. It's the only way. You can be scoring more points, allowing fewer, accumulating more yards, allowing fewer, and have three fewer wins. Because the Packers found a way to win a 5-point game against Minnesota, a 7-point game in the opening night against Chicago, to go to Kansas City and win a 7-point game, albeit against a backup quarterback. Dallas has found ways to lose, while the teams that are achieving to the level they should have found ways to win. That, to me, is an indictment on coaching. Not just Jason Garrett. The staff as a whole, but Jason Garrett's the one who obviously is the face of it all.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.